now on, it's Magic Man and El Diablo.
What's Diablo mean?
It's like, you know, it's like Spanish for like a fighting chicken.
That's awesome.
I know.
With the claws.
With the claws. That's... and the beak.
What do you think of that?
You just, sometimes things click.
Sometimes things click. Sometimes they go incredibly awfully wrong. You can look at some of those NFL teams, Irby, on that one. Hello, lollygaggers. It's another week, another time to talk some sports. We've got week two to preview in the NFL after a bizarre week one. We've got some baseball news to talk about. But first off, Irby, how you doing?
I am great. I a good week, good halfway through the week. Thanks for that intro. That's a solid. You know, you went with the NFL teams, and I'm sitting there trying to think through. It's like, you know, who of the teams would that be most? And I don't know if that would be the Giants or the Commanders, or honestly, it may just say that's the Vikings. That was the Vikings. You know, some days it just clicks. And now it helps in the Viking situation when you have Jair Alexander. Like, yeah, I can stop Justin Jefferson one on one. About that, not so great.
All right. Well, let's get into it. For those of you that are new to the program, I promise you by the time we're done today, you're going to realize why Samantha does not leave us without adult supervision. I'm just throwing it out there, Irby. This happens every time. Every time Samantha is out, we tend to have a show that's our own little thing, and we sometimes get a little off the rails. But you know, it is what it is.
Honestly, the three of us, I think this is why it works so well, because it is a great Venn diagram of the three of us. It's, when you have all three, there's that little bitty space where all three connect. And so it's great when it's there. But yes, when you take one of the pistons out of this engine, yes, there's a good chance that we may end up talking about how Kermit the Frog might be a better quarterback candidate than...
Cooper Rush. Yeah.
Hey, there we go.
I knew where you were going with that immediately, and it's not wrong. I'll take Uncle Rico at this point over
Uncle Rico. Actually, those pictures have been flying around Dallas. Uncle Rico sitting next to Jerry,
as they should.
Where's Shane Falco? Shane, why don't you bring in some Shane Falco?
You know, I actually might prefer Shane Falco now that you mention it. I actually might prefer him.
That's true. You know what? Here we go. We're going to do this right off the bat. We need to write that down and revisit that. What quarterbacks in the fiction world would actually be on a said NFL team? I feel like that is a real good segment for the future when we get one of those weeks that we have to sit here and talk about, you know, I don't know, the Texans playing the Jets. Like one of those weeks when we have to talk about those games. We need to talk about the fiction quarterbacks who best fit with these NFL teams.
What was the name of the quarterback from Necessary Roughness? Played by Scott Bakula. What was his name? Are you going to look that up? I'm curious.
I got you.
I can't remember his name, but I would definitely want him on my team. That guy has a cannon. I mean, just out throwing the entire defense and his receivers. Granted, that was a movie.
That's the point. But see, are you talking about the 1991 movie, correct?
What other Necessary Roughness is there?
Okay, I just want to make sure that we haven't had some like Hulu's redone this or Amazon Prime, something like that.
No. See, if Hulu tries to redo this, we riot.
Okay, see, all right, but that would be, and it was played by Scott Bakula, correct?
Yes.
He played the quarterback. Okay, yeah, Paul Blake.
Paul Blake.
Paul Blake sounds like a name that you would find on, like, the Colts. I mean, they already got a quarterback with two first names, so why not have Paul Blake?
Yeah, why not? Why not have Paul Blake? All right, well, You're right. It didn't take long. See, this is what happens when we don't have adult supervision. We immediately go off script. So let's put this back on its tracks, Irby. Let's get into these new rules that are coming to Major League Baseball to a stadium near you in 2023. So I think we already knew that the shift adjustments were coming. It's interesting how they did it, how you have to have infielders on each side of second base with their feet in the dirt. So you can't have that fourth outfielder, that shallow outfielder. You can't put everybody on the right side anymore. You have to have two on the left, two on the right side of second base, three outfielders, not four. I mean, we saw that coming. I'm curious what you think on that one, but let's get through all of them first. They've approved a pitch clock, 15 seconds if there's nobody on base, 20 seconds with runners on. The one that I found to be the most ridiculous is we're going to limit how many times you can throw over to a bag that's got a runner on it. You only get two of those now. All kinds of different problems. We're going to go into that one as well. But let's start with that shift, because like I said, I think we all expected that coming in. Do you think they did it the best they could, Irby, or is there more work to do here?
I mean, there's more work, and there may be less work. I'm not a big fan of limiting shifts. And I'm not a big fan of this. I get that why you're doing that, because you're basically embracing a sport where we're not going to hit off the field, we're not going to directional hit and everything. It's everything wrong of what my childhood was like. So I'm not a big fan of that. I'm very curious and need to do a little bit deeper dive on this stuff, because this whole thing, I mean, just like you said, it's the infielders, it's both feet have to be in the dirt. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so both feet have to be in the dirt. Okay. The dimensions and depth of the dirt on a Major League Baseball field, what are those set parameters? Or are we soon going to have teams that suddenly, we extended our dirt 20 feet deeper?
That's a good question. I don't know for sure off the top of my head, but I would think, obviously teams can have their stadium dimensions be what they want, but I would think like the infield dirt has to be the same uniform standard league-wide. I would think the warning track has to be the same standard league-wide. The things that are in play should be standard outside of course, the outfield wall, but like foul territory, look at the Coliseum in Oakland. You can make that as big as you want. Okay, I don't think they can do that for the infields, but I'm also not totally sure on that either.
Yeah, and this is the problem. This is what we're going to have, is you're going to have teams doing exactly that, looking at, okay, well, can we do this? Can we do that? And can we change the dirt dimensions? Because is that what we're going to see? We see the infield dirt designed similar to home runs, where you've got the left side is basically non-existent and the right side, it reaches out to the right fielder. And that's the other problem too, is are we going to be shifting, a left fielder over to the right side and stuff like that, where that's what's going to change. So since you won't address the heart of this problem, and that's directional hitting, and that's teaching hitting better, and that's stop trying to hit home runs or strike. I mean, the three true outcomes is what led to this. So that's not going to be fixed. We're going to have these little tweaks left and right. So I don't know. There may be some positives from this. I'm not going to, I don't like it. It's the best way. I don't like it, but I'm not going to sit here and pout and not watch baseball, because I just don't like it that you're essentially coddling the, and I'm a fan of him, but the Joey Gallo. So, hey, yeah, we know you can't hit anywhere but right field. So here, we're going to make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the better approach would have been essentially like the mound visits. You get so many per game. There are only so many at-bats throughout the game where you can do a shift. And you can cap that. You can shift three times. You can shift four times. I'm wondering...
That's fine.
I wonder if that would have been the better way to go here, because there's so many different ways you can go wrong with trying to restrict how teams can play defensively, right? Especially in the infield. There's just so many different ways you can go wrong with this. The more practical, the more prudent approach, I think, would have been to limit, let them shift however they want, but you only get to do it for 3 at bats throughout the entire game.
Yeah, and that's what we'll see, and then we're going to have a rule that's doing that, and we're changing this, and that's the problem. Is if you don't really address the problem, there's going to be little things here and there to tweak. I mean, that I joked about the Joey Gallo, but that's essentially what's going to happen for someone like him. You're going to bring the left fielder in to play shallow right field, and because you know everything's going to that side, so and then you can move your center fielder just a little bit over to left center because it's going to loop it. I mean, that's whatever. It's not a fan. I don't foresee. This is going to help the offense, sure. I mean, we talk about in 2022, the league-wide BABIP was .291. And that's from in 2006, it was .301. So a 10-point drop-off on balls put in play. Over that 16-year span. So that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to get back to that above 300 BABIP, which, sure, that's going to lead to more offense, that's going to lead to more runs. I don't think any of us are going to argue that more runs, higher scoring games, leads to more excitement of the average fan, which leads to more excitement and more views. Sure, absolutely. I do think a casual fan, you can keep more engaged when there's a lot of run scoring. I have an 11 and a 9-year-old. You know, it is easier to keep them engaged in the game when there's more offense. They don't appreciate a good defensive, a good pitching game yet. That day may come, but right now it's not. And baseball has a lot of fans where it's, you need the instantaneous. You need the immediate. And that's what hopefully these defensive shifts, we will see an improve of that. More offense, more hits, things like that.
All right, so let's get into then the pickoff of runners and what we're doing, how we're absolutely destroying this particular part of the game. Because like I immediately, and of course, Samantha and I engaged in this on Twitter when this first came down, and I immediately, when I saw they were going to limit the number of pickoff attempts to 2 per at bat, I immediately thought about the overreaction to Buster Posey shattering his ankle, and now all of a sudden we can't block the plate anymore. Like, I find these rules to be similar in terms of they're not necessary, and they're taking a big piece out of baseball. They're taking a big piece out of the strategy of baseball by doing this. Let's start with the obvious. If you've got a slow runner at first base, and you know that that pitcher only has 2 pickoff throws. You survive 2 pickoff throws, you can essentially walk between first and second base. Right? That's the obvious. I don't know how.
Well, not necessarily, because it doesn't happen after 2. It's on the third.
Right,
the
third
attempt, if you're not successful picking them off,
mm-hmm.
then they automatically get the
ball. Right. Right. All of a sudden, slow runners are going to be at second base instead of staying at first. So that's yeah. That's problem number one. It's a balk if you try it a third time and you fail. It's a balk. Well, by definition of balk, all the runners move. What if there's a runner at third and that's the winning run? Now all of a sudden you're not making that third throw over because you can't risk it. So it really is 2, when you think of it that way. It really is 2. So I don't like it. I think this is stupid. I've gotten used to some of the other stuff they've done, but this is right up there in terms of the ghost runner with me, Irby, is just flat out not needed and really going to cause more trouble than it's worth.
Yes, I don't. I understand what you're trying to do with this. I think that the 3 is too low. Three attempts, if unsuccessful 3 times, they automatically get the base. I don't like. I think that number's too low. I would leave maybe five is the number, because in a at bat, if you're picking off, yeah, four or five times, that is okay. Now we're pushing a little too much, but two really isn't that. I mean, you think about situations, and when a great one is the Dave Roberts stealing the second base. You know, the wonderful moment for the Red Sox that everybody knew, like the pitcher, the catcher, everybody, all of us watching it, we all knew he's stealing. As soon as the pitch is thrown home, we know he's stealing. So you're not going to get that situation. You're only going to get a couple chances there of homer over there once, and that's it. And so there is some enjoyment there, possibly. Again, you're doing this to improve the. There's the fun thing about Manfred, which I can't say. This is all about, oh, we're improving the time. Bull crap. You ain't improving time. This is upping the offense. You want more steals. And that gets into the last one we'll talk about here. But you want more steals. You want more base movement. You want more runs. So
right.
That's the root of this. This has nothing to do with time. This has to do with upping the offense.
There are many ways you could do that. This is not one of them. Now, what if you did this? Let's say they're just hell-bent on three. Then make it has to be three consecutive tosses over. Because no one, I don't care who you are. You don't like it when you get like five or six straight. That's when you start getting the boos from the stands, right? You get the five, you get the six, the seven throws over in a row because there's a fast runner on the bag. It seems like that's what they're trying to go after. Fine. Make your restriction consecutive throws over. In other words, you can only throw over two times consecutively before you have to make a pitch to the plate. I could be in favor of that. That I can deal with. It's when you're limiting the entire at-bat to the two unsuccessful and a third, but you better be successful when you toss over.
Yeah, no, that's a real good point. I mean, I was saying the five, but I'm on board with the consecutive between specific pitches. Sure, absolutely. You don't. There's no need to throw over there three times in a row before throwing a pitch home. That is a tactic. And we've seen this before. That's a tactic warming up the bullpen.
Oh yeah,
that has less to do with the batter, the runner over there. But and this is what's tough is that we have issues with this and all that, but it's happening. So it's happening. Okay, well. As a fan of a team with three outfielders who are already potentially 25 steals a season guy, sounds good. Suddenly, this role and the next one we're going to talk about, suddenly the Rangers got three outfielders who could be doing 40 steals a season. So, okay, sounds good.
Okay. All right, let's get into the new pitch clock. That we're going to have, because while I'm not against a pitch clock per se, you know, pitchers shouldn't be able to go grab a sandwich in between pitches anymore. I'm okay with that. The only problem I have here, Herbie, is you're requiring three different players to adhere to this clock every single pitch. The catcher must be in position when the timer hits 10 seconds. The hitter must be in the batter, have both feet in the batter's box and be alert, whatever that means, at the 8
I love that part.
At the 8-second mark. And then the pitcher must start his motion to pitch by the expiration of the clock. We're also not mentioned here, the umpire has to keep track of all this. Like I get the pitch clock. But it really should be as simple as the pitcher has 20 seconds to make a pitch. Why are we confusing the hell out of everybody and creating the potential for pure chaos because four different people have to keep track of this clock every single pitch?
Yeah, this is definitely going to have, we're going to have some growing pains. We're definitely going to have some growing pains with this. The 30 seconds in between batters? I get it. I'm on board.
Yeah.
15 seconds with bases between pitches, 15 seconds with empty, 20 with a runner on. Okay. I mean, I get why you have the extra 5 seconds. Okay, I get that. I get what you're saying. Yeah, the 10 seconds and the 8, sure. There's a lot going on here. There's a lot of poetry in motion. But the hard thing is it's hard to argue the results. Minor League Baseball is what's been testing this out, and they've been moving all up and down the different levels. And they are seeing 25 to 30-minute reduced time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's tough. It's like, okay, I get it. I get what you're doing. It's the hard fast of it that I don't love. The 8 second with the batter, and then it's almost too quick in there, especially, I mean, that's what, 8 seconds on the 15 second clock or the 20 second clock. I mean, it's just, yeah, there's a lot there. I'm more of, yeah, put the clock up there, the 30 seconds in between batters and then 20 in between pitches. And then the umpire will determine himself. I mean, I'm almost on board. I almost would rather have a clock out there that is constantly counting through. I mean, whatever, you could do 30. It's constantly just going 0 to 30, 0 to 30, 0 to 30, 0 to 30, and let the umpire deal with it. Let the umpire make that decision of, okay, this moment. Or he's the one in control of it. Something like that, a button. Do you have, like, the second base umpire is the one that restarts the clock? Restart the clock, because that's a lot of motion. That's a lot in motion, and this is where I'm a catcher. I was a former catcher. You know, a strike zone, yes, there is a parameters for strike zone, but that's a guideline. An umpire sometimes going to call a pitch that Southern Other calls it a ball. He's calling it a strike today, and he's going to consistently call that a strike. I would prefer that the umpires have a little bit of discretion here with this clock, and I know they can say, well, yeah, they can wave it off if there's special circumstances. No. I want them to be able to sit there. I want them to have that ability to tell the batter, get in the box. All right, you're not getting the box. Strike one. Like I told you, get in the box. And you can have those warnings and, hey, get in the box. But when you're adhering to the time, like now the umpires are going to be stricken on this because they're going to be judged on it. They are going to hold this too, where you can't even get mad at players. Batters, catchers, pitchers, managers are going to be getting upset with the umpire. The umpire's going, look, there's nothing I can do. This isn't even about me. This is a clock. It has nothing to do with me. Clock has started. You see the clock. And so growing, that's the issue. Is there going to be growing pains with this? This has the potential to be a rule that if we'll have some headaches in 2023, probably some in 2024. And by 2025, we'll forget about it, and it'll just become part of regular day.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. In my mind, I'm wondering how many different ways Angel Hernandez can screw this up. Because it's going to...
We don't have enough time.
We don't. Ironic, since we're talking about a clock. How about the infractions? Okay, because a violation by the pitcher is an automatic ball. One by the hitter constitutes an automatic strike. Well, what about the catcher?
Yep.
What if the catcher is not in position at the 10-second mark and throws everybody off? Is that an automatic ball because it's the fielding team?
I assume so, but yes, I see the issue. Yeah, one more thing. Angel Hernandez is going to probably award the wrong one. Oh, the strike. The batter's looking at him going, I've been in the box. He's not throwing a pitch. Nope, that's another strike.
All right, real quick then, before we go, I did want to go through the with the defensive shift. One thing I forgot to do back when we were talking about that, I want to bring it back up. What happens when you violate this particular thing? So you had a player defensively that had half a foot in the grass. Can't do that anymore. So at that point, the batting team can choose to either accept the outcome of the play or take an automatic ball instead. Now, in the land of ghost runners and automatic balks, if you throw over too many times and we're adding a ball or adding a strike based off of how of the clock management of the players involved with that pitch. In the world of all that, I'm going to give you something that's even crazier, Irby. Imagine this. Bases are juiced. Ghost runners at third. Runners at second and first. 3-2 count. Line drive caught by the shortstop. Two outs in the inning, by the way. Line drive caught by the shortstop, but half of his foot was on the grass. We're going to take the automatic ball, and we're going to have a walk-off walk where the ghost runner scored. Because that could legitimately happen with these rules.
You would make it worse for you? What if that said runner on base is the winning runner, the tying run, and the ball's gap? That runner at first, the ball's put in the gap, and there's a bang-bang play at the plate. He's called safe. We go to video replay. We spend a few minutes going to New York getting the video replay just to go, yeah, no, he is out. He's out. Yeah, he's out. Oh, but we'll take the ball now. And we do it all over again. We've just wasted 5 minutes.
That's true, too. That's true, too. Oh, man.
this is becoming the... you're going to have that conversation with some of these quicker runners. It's almost like what we see with like offsides in football. When the offsides, like, okay, free play. Like if you know you've got this, you know you've got the free play. Like there's no way this singles a double. Like, well, go ahead and stretch it. Let's see what happens. We need the double. Now he was thrown out. Okay, never mind. We'll take the ball. Unfortunately, this won't. I don't think that will. We will see that one. We will definitely see it happen, but it won't be that often, just because teams are just not gonna. It's just not gonna be worth it. But I do love the whole at the time of the pitch. So, are we going to see infielders in motion as the ball is being released? That will be intriguing.
We'll see.
Are you going to see a shortstop, and I'll pick on the Joey Gallo thing. Are you going to see basically, and I'll have people think volleyball. You think about volleyball when you can't switch, where you've got your sticks lined up, you can't do anything until the ball has been served. Are you going to have your third baseman standing basically at second base, and at the time that the ball is let go, he is running? I mean, he could even get a running start. He's standing behind the shortstop. He starts a running start, and he's timing it so that the pitcher is let go of the ball as he is passing second base in a full sprint out there to the right field, shallow right field. Because that's legal in what you've set up. That's legal. Because they've got to keep their feet in the dirt. He's in the dirt, and he is on this side of second base, but he is in a full sprint while the pitch is being thrown.
That opens up a whole other realm of possible reviews.
Yes. You're going to be reviewing he's past second base before that pitch was let go.
Yeah, exactly. No, he made it past second. Ball still in his hand. That's
well, and that's the thing is he doesn't have to go that far. Because I said run out to the outfield. I'm wrong. No. You put your first baseman, you're shifting to right. I'm going to continue to pick on Mr. Gallo. But a shift on Joey Gallo, first baseman's playing deep like always. You put your second baseman on that dirt, right at the edge of the dirt. And at the time of the pitch being let go, he is immediately like a cornerback backpedaling to cover more ground. And the shortstop is laying his normal spot. The third baseman he's 6 feet away from second base. As the pitcher begins his windup, the third baseman begins running past second base. He's just going a little bit past second because he's going to be playing essentially where the second baseman is. So he might not even have to be running. He's kind of doing side-to-side shift like a linebacker. I mean, you're going to see all kinds of stuff in motion. And then you're going to get complaints about, well, they're moving. Well, yeah, of course they're moving. It's the only way we can shift. Yeah, this is happening.
Oh, it's happening all right. It's going to be... I almost said an adjustment, but I think it's going to be more of just pure chaos. That's just what we're going to have, pure chaos. All right, let's get into our week two preview here for the NFL. We got a few matchups we're going to talk about here, starting with, of course, Bucks and Saints. Irby, we saw from the Bucks on Sunday Night Football that their patchwork offensive line at the moment is holding. There's not a lot that went right for Dallas Sunday night, but the pass rush wasn't the problem. But they were able to still pick up what Dallas is doing. So now we get now they're going to go and they're going to face the Saints. This is the Saints team that almost lost to Atlanta. Got close. They're we talked about it before the season. Talked about them being potentially a wild card team with all the Bucs injuries. If the Bucs had some problems there, if they had other injuries, maybe the Saints could come up and grab them. So I think what it comes down to here with the Saints is if you legitimately want to have a shot at this division, first of all, you got to play better than you did last week. But second of all, you have to beat the team that's expected to win, and that's who they have right now. So if they can't, are they still, based off what you saw last week, are they still in the wild card discussion?
Oh, yes. Because this is, I love this matchup, especially with both these teams coming off wins. Yes, Tampa's win looked a lot more dominant than New Orleans. But again, this is where I have to bring up week one. You know, this is the week one conversation. Last year, sure. Week one, the Bills looked like crap and lost to the Steelers.
Very true.
Terrible, terrible game. So New Orleans, I mean, it's the Saints have had a history of having close games with Atlanta, period. So there's where I love, if I'm in the Saints situation, you're loving this. Yes, it was close. It wasn't pretty, but it was a win. And it was a road win. Okay, you went into Atlanta, you got the win. Now you're coming home with an opportunity to be up a game in your division and 2-0 in your division. So I love this opportunity for the Saints, and partly because I picked them to win this division. So good start for that selection. Definitely got to have this one here. The Saints have got a little bit to figure out with the run game. I'm sorry, Taysom Hill, if that's your leading rusher every week, is not exactly how you need to be doing things, but whatever. You did what you had to do to get the win. Yes, it wasn't pretty, but it wasn't that ugly. Jameis Winston was fine. Him finding Jarvis Landry was great for their offense. You've got Kamara, you got Hill. I mean, we're named Michael Thomas here, who he ended up finding in the second half and taking care of business. And so Saints did what they had to do. They got a win, and they put themselves in a position where a win here, and yes, I mean, it's still the wild card is there, but you're 2-0, and you would be 2-0 in your division and 2-0 in the conference. So, yeah, huge game for the Saints when it comes to long-term ramifications.
Bucks, meanwhile, lose Chris Godwin. He's going to be out for a little bit. So he obviously wasn't quite ready to come back. I don't think they'll skip a beat, though, based off of what I saw on Sunday. Let's keep going with the Saints here, though, because the Bucks are the Bucks. We know what the Bucks are going to be and whatnot. So let's focus on the Saints here, because you had, not so long ago, it was the Sean Payton, Drew Brees show. Now it's the Jameis Winston and Dennis Allen show, and that doesn't sound as awesome because they really haven't done anything yet. What are you expecting from this, from these new look Saints? Is Dennis Allen the guy that's going to be able to get what he needs out of Jameis Winston to get them over the top?
Hey, that's a great question, and that's what's tough about, you know, following what Peyton did. Like, you never want to be the coach, the immediate one after a legend like that. It never works. It's tough. It's very, very tough. But hey, got the job done, and in a comeback fashion. I mean, what were they down 16 in the fourth quarter, and you know, a road win, down 16, road win, regardless of the opponent and all that. You got the done, and it was against. I mean, Marcus Mariota is no slouch quarterback. I know he struggled. We consider him a top 32 quarterback in the NFL, but he is right now, and he did a road win there. The thing is the amount of rushing yards they allowed is the problem. But then again, Fournette's banged up too, so not as big of a concern against Tampa. It's going to be a great game just because of that. I what these two and how well they know each other. But no, to circle back. Dennis Allen, Jameis Winston, I mean, that week one, down 16 in the fourth quarter, come back and win, that puts you in an amazing mode. You know, it is on the road. yes, it was Atlanta. We can say all the things we want Atlanta. But
so many jokes.
Feel, yeah, there's plenty up there. Absolutely. But you were down 16 with what? It was early in the fourth quarter. It was like 13 minutes to play. But still, down 16 on the road. And you came back and won. So, that does wonders for a new coach. Does wonders for the situation that the Saints are in. It's a kind of a new era. It's past the Sean Payton era. But it's a great way to start. And here you go. Another chance for it. So, I think they're riding really high right now.
Well, how high are they riding? Or it's time to pick them. Who do you have winning this one?
I mean, wouldn't that be like the ultimate hypocrite right now if I said all those things and they go, but Tom Brady, blah, 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 blah. No. Saints. I'm gonna take the Saints at home. I know what Tampa did to Dallas, and Dallas, the only team in the NFL last week, did score a touchdown. Yeah, okay, but yeah, you know, that's you took out the quarterback. Not necessarily took them out or anything, but it that made stuff easier. And the Cowboys looked kind of lost and everything. Tampa's a little banged up. You mentioned Godwin, things like that. So yeah, at home, I'm gonna take the Saints here. I'm gonna take the Saints 2-0 in the division.
Oof, I'm gonna take Tampa. Mainly because I can, because I didn't give a glowing review of the Saints like someone did. So I can take.
Yeah, hold on. Now that I've done that, for anybody out there that wants to go gambling, Tampa favored by 2.5. Yeah, you darn well better take the Bucs, because then now they're going to lose by the Saints going to lose by 30. Now that I've done that glowing review.
Yeah, way to go, bud. You just jinxed the Saints. what the hell do they do to you anyway?
I would know it's the thing that we do. You do it for baseball. I do it for football. You know, it's
yeah. But see, I use my powers in baseball for good.
I don't know what my powers are. That's the problem. I don't understand my own strength.
It's sad. Okay, Dolphins are in Baltimore to play the Ravens. One thing we've seen from the Dolphins since they put two in the lineup is they like to run a lot of run pass option stuff, right? Like that's their way of keeping Tua from getting himself into trouble, either protecting him, which one I think is ridiculous. They need to stop doing that because you're never going to get to the Super Bowl doing that. But that's neither here nor there. But if they're going to continue to do that, which all indications are that they will. How are the Ravens defensively equipped to handle that?
I have to answer now. Or can I answer Sunday afternoon?
Of course you have to answer now. What kind of a question is that?
It's more fun to answer later on. They're really well equipped. That's a great question. Baltimore has seen it before. Fortunately, it's a whole lot easier to explain to your defense and see this all the time because you have your own quarterback that has capabilities doing it. So I think Baltimore will be ready for it. It's tough to really – I have a hard time talking too much Baltimore just because, yes, I know that they played last week, but did they? I mean, did they have to? Like, I don't want to quote their stats. Their numbers, this, and that, because they didn't really have to play a full game against a full team last week. So it's hard to see what the Ravens did and be like, oh, yeah, they'll be fine, or this, and that. I mean, because it wasn't great. Statistically, it wasn't great, but they also did have to play a full game. Here you're going to, and they're at home. So I fully anticipate the Ravens defense showing up and forcing Tua into some tough situations.
Yeah, no, I think they will. Unless they have a little bit of a hangover from playing somebody that, like you said, was a pretty easy opponent for all kinds of different reasons. Let's talk about then that Ravens offense, not their defense. Let's talk about their offense. What are we expecting? You know, they had a lot of injuries last year. This year, everyone, at least at the moment, seems like everyone's okay. Everyone's healthy, but they haven't started dropping like flies yet. Where are we with the Ravens offensively? They've got obviously in the AFC, they have there's a lot of high octane offenses that they're going to have to keep up with if they want to have Super Bowl dreams. right? So where are we with the Ravens offense? Where are we expecting them to be by the end, by not just in this game, but like end of the season?
Well, when you got Justin Tucker kicking field goals for you, you're always in a range of scoring.
That's also true.
I literally think the guy could probably make an 80-yarder if he really had to in the right conditions. Totally on board with seeing this happen, too. I know there's some concern about I'm totally blanking on the name. J.K. Dobbins, sorry. J.K. Dobbins with the running game, because I don't fully trust Kenyon Drake back there. And last week was kind of a good example of that the run game isn't amazing. They don't trust Justice Hill with the ball yet. And so, but again, I should say, again, that's a game that you were in control of against the Jets, and you still couldn't run the ball very well. So that do have some concerns there. Throwing the ball, kind of exactly what we expected. What happened? Devin Duvernay has kind of proven that, you don't need to pay Marquise Brown. You can let him go, and you can go with Duvernay. It's basically the exact same thing. Mark Andrews, five catches, 52 yards. So, you'll take that from your tight end. That's a bad game for him, but that's right where you want it to be. So, this Ravens offense, again, I don't think it was a full game you had to worry about, so you can't get too excited about what we saw from them, but they took care of business and they got the job done. And now you're going to play a Dolphins team that's a step up. So this will be the first real test of, is this a solid Ravens offense? Is this a Ravens offense that's fully clicking? And I know the whole contract thing you can say with Lamar, everyone can say all they want, oh, it's not a distraction at all. Okay, we'll see.
Okay, well, first of all, Appalachian State is a step up above the Jets when it comes to defense. I'm kidding. Samantha hears that, she's going to yell at me. You're not supposed to say that because it's actually not true. But the point is, of course the Dolphins are a step up defensively over the Jets. Now, how much? I think that's the real question. I mean, yeah, they played well against the Patriots week one. They sure did. But those concerns are still there. Can they get to the quarterback fast enough? Can their secondary be picked apart? Yes, absolutely it can. And Lamar Jackson's the guy that's going to do it.
Yeah, at least for this season. We'll see if he's there next year. I mean, that's the biggie. I know he said that himself. So let's see what he can do. We're really going to find out who they are. Well, it's the same with Miami. I mean, I know we can say, well, Miami beat the Patriots. Yeah, well, there's a long-running history of the Patriots week one still acting like this is preseason football and getting themselves figured out and into full speed. So it looked great, and it's a great start for the Dolphins, and here you got an opportunity to kind of make it the same thing. I mean, get 2-0, but it's two conference wins, and it's two conference wins against teams that you might be competing for wild card spots against. So yeah,
right.
Miami, yeah, this is a great spot for them to kind of get on the plus side of some tiebreakers.
All right, let's pick this one then. Who do you have, Dolphins or Ravens?
I'm excited about this game. I think it's going to be close. Baltimore 3.5 favorite. So I'm going to say that they win. They're not going to cover that. It's going to be close. There might be a field goal win, but. Yeah, I can see Baltimore getting the ball last and letting Justin Tucker chip shot a 55-yarder to win it.
That is a chip shot for Justin Tucker. I'm going the other way here. I'm going with the Dolphins. I'm taking the Dolphins. You know why?
Good.
I'm going to tell you why I'm taking the Dolphins, because this is exactly the game the Ravens love to lose.
That's true.
Okay, this is exactly the game the Ravens love to lose. And the Dolphins just scream what the Panthers did last year. Right, start off quick and then just completely lose it. Like, just completely forget how to play football for 8-9 straight weeks and fall out of the race. I think that's where we're at with both these teams.
Hey, I'm there for heart in it. The heart is fine with that. The Dolphins getting up 2-0, especially if the Bills can do it again. I know the Bills play on Monday. They'll know, but be 2-0, and even if Pittsburgh takes care of the Patriots and they're 0-2, then suddenly we have some interesting conversations. So Yeah, I'm.
Yeah.
the heart / chaos in me is hoping the Dolphins get this one.
All right, one more, and then we're going to be done previewing week two of the NFL season. Vikings and Eagles. This has obviously taken a little bit of a different turn, especially for the Eagles after what we saw week one. And some news that has come out since Sunday. These were the two going into the season that we were looking at as if somebody was going to play the upset role in each of their division. It was going to be the Vikings in the North and the Eagles in the East. Well, now they're still not the favorite. At least the Vikings still aren't the favorites. The Eagles might be, depending on how long Dak Prescott's out. The Eagles might actually be the favorites now to win the East. But let's just say, you know, just for the hell of it, we're going to say Dak does get back somehow in time to save the Cowboys season. So they're still the underdogs looking to upset the favorites in their division. The Vikings just very handily took care of the Packers on Sunday. That wasn't close. It was glorious. I enjoyed every minute of that game. The Eagles, they got up to a big lead against the Lions, really came close to blowing it there at the end. I'm still not sold on Jalen Hurts, but who else in that division is going to step up and challenge them? Has the opinion changed here between these two? I mean, I think it would be an overreaction to suddenly say the Vikings are on par with the Packers. But the Eagles being the favorites in the East, I don't think is an overreaction.
No, and I'll start there with Philly. I understand what you're saying, and this is where you believed, and you as in Philly believed, that they were going to compete head-to-head with Dallas. A lot of us didn't. But the opportunity has presented itself, and we talked about them being the spoilers, and now it's here. And with Dak out, you know, conventional thinking says 6 to 8 weeks. I know out of Dallas they're talking 4 weeks. Don't do that to yourself. Gary,
no,
but
don't
whatever.
Do that. No.
They're gonna do whatever they want to do. So 6 to 8 weeks, because you can't lose it in that time. Like Dallas should be able to stay real close. Philly's not gonna be 8-0 at that time. That would be well,
right.
No, they won't. They're not. But the opportunity is there for Philly. Like this is where what's crazy about the division where you don't get back to back winners. It's like, well, and we're all like, it shouldn't happen this year. Well, here we go. Now here's the opportunity. So the opportunity is presented for Jalen Hurts to definitely grow up. For, I mean, A.J. Brown, boy, that's looked great. One game, but that's looked great. So lots of things positive there. Like you said, not a clean win. I mean, it's a win, 38-35 over an upstart Lions team in Detroit. That's a little scary there at the end. But you got the job done on the road. Against the Detroit team that we've talked about is better than what their final record may show. That right there almost didn't surprise. I know it didn't surprise me. I'm sure you as well.
No,
that 38-35. So that I think speaks to that Philly is a legit team. Now from the flip side, Minnesota, sure, great start. Took care of the Packers. Bam, got the win. You know, the one at home against Green Bay. Green Bay is all the jokes that we make about Aaron Rodgers, this and that. He's still a great quarterback and can get the job done. He's got a lot of youth. They got a lot of things to figure out. I'm not betting against them figuring it out at some point. So get your lead, get out in front. You got a win over them. You got a division win. They got a division win. All those things. Great start. But great starts mean nothing if you falter right over your own feet in November and December. I know many times we talk about teams November or December, but Minnesota does it in November and December. So great start, awesome, keep it up, but don't trip over your own feet here in the end. So great start, opportunity, same thing, and that's what's great is we talked about both these teams as being possibilities of being the upstarts, being those that could they dethrone the division champs. The opportunity has definitely been placed in front of them. I don't know who's going to take it, but one of them, very potentially, is going to be 2-0, looking real pretty here. come I was about to say come Sunday night, but no, come Monday evening, Monday, late Monday evening. That's the Monday night game.
Yeah, you know, one way to go about what the Vikings did with Green Bay that's not an overreaction, at least not for me, it's just how much I thoroughly enjoyed watching the Packers lose a division game to start the season. That was amazing. I need more of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you heard what I said at the beginning with Jaire Alexander basically calling out Justin Jefferson and then getting, I mean, just absolutely smoked. That was...
Yeah, but maybe don't call out Justin Jefferson. Let's start there.
I was debating, was that worse than what happened to Jalen Ramsey Thursday night? I don't think it was. I think Jalen Ramsey looked, I mean, just god-awful Thursday night against the Bills.
Yeah, I don't know which one was worse either. That's a good question. I don't know. One more thing on the Eagles then before we pick this game. I think when I look at the Eagles, and I can get past my lack of confidence in Jalen Hurts, because you look at the defense for Philly. Defense is pretty stiff, especially up front. I like them up front. You could definitely get their secondary, but their up front part of their defense is enough to at least even let's say that Dak Prescott didn't hurt his hand. Let's say that Dallas played well and won that game on Sunday. I would still be concerned about the Eagles because of their defense, because that is a defense that can keep, that will keep them in games all year long. Is that the X factor for the Eagles? Their defense shows up 15 out of 18 weeks. Boom, they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, so I mean, from that standpoint, absolutely. If your defense is going to show up 15 out of 15 weeks out of the season, yes, you're going to be in the conversation no matter what. I have my concern. I agree about the offensive line. It's great, all that, and what we've seen. But I do have my concerns with that Philly run game or the run defense. That was DeAndre Swift. Mm-hmm. Really lived up to his name last week. Like he was
nice.
He looked good. And Dalvin Cook has the ability to do the exact same thing. And I know he's basically the guy there. Mattinson really isn't much of, I mean, the numbers are fine, but it's not the same. So I think that's the difference in this game. And I won't double down just essential, but we're going to talk about it in the pick. I think it comes down to the running game. The run offense versus the run defense, and who does it? Because you've got great receivers like Justin Jefferson and A.J. Brown and Adam Thielen and Devontae Smith. You've got names there, but I think this game comes down to who controls the run game.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of, who are you going to pick? Who's going to do that? Who's going to control the run game and win the game for you? Who's going to do that?
I think Philly controls it a little bit better. Being at home is going to play into the factor here. I think the Eagles control the run game a little better. Again, this should be a close matchup. I'm not saying it won't come down to the receivers and the passing game that might make the difference in the end, but I think Philly controls the run game more, and that sets them up for the win here.
You know, I really like what the Vikings did last week. They're not going to get away with it against Philly. I think you're going to find, I think we're all going to find that the Packers are actually a heck of a lot worse than we thought. That was my takeaway from Sunday. It had little to do with the Vikings, a lot more to do with the Packers are actually worse than we thought they would be. Plus, let's be honest, the Cowboys' luck isn't going to change. The Eagles win this one, go 2-0 in the division, and move on to bigger and better things. That's what's going to happen. All right, one more thing then before we go. So you know, since Samantha's out tonight, we don't have the Let's Remember Some Trades segment. That'll be back next week with when Samantha's back. But how about this? How about we do this, Irby? How about we just go think back And it doesn't, there's no stipulations here. This could be a trade that happened before we were born that you just really researched and loved, or it could be a trade that happened this trade deadline. What is one trade, and you cannot use, I'm going to stipulate this, you cannot use the Mark Teixeira trade. That's too easy. You cannot use Mark Teixeira in 2007. You cannot use that trade. It's too easy. What is a trade that just stands out to you as something where you went, wow?
Wow, and I get to interpret wow how I want, correct? Is that my parameter? Does it let me get to use that one trade that I absolutely love?
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to take, because of the wow, and it's one that stuck with me, well, I'm going to take one that we actually have done on here. A couple weeks ago, shocker, it's the Ranger one, but it is the July 28th, 2006 trade with the Brewers and the Rangers, that netted Nelson Cruz for Texas.
Nice.
That one, just because, yes, that was a Texas team that was competing, was in the conversation. It's like, here we go. They've moved from puncher, an average team to an above average team. They're in the conversation. So you go get a guy like Carlos Lee, and you move on from, Coco Cordero hurt, but Kevin mentioned Lance Nix were never going to be part of your long-term plans. So you get like Carlos Lee on a rental, hoping that it made the difference. And though his power didn't show up when the trade happened, he still got hit for average. They ultimately fell short, obviously. But it's the throw-in piece, the Nelson Cruz. Those are the trade. I love the throw-in stuff, and that's what makes this segment we'll have back next week. But it's what I love about this segment, because it is those throw-in pieces. It's that extra piece where it doesn't seem like a much at the time. Everybody at that time thought, oh, no, Kevin Mensch is leaving. Oh, we're getting Carlos Lee. That's awesome. And I remember telling people, no, the minor leaguer. Nelson Cruz, that's the guy you wanted in this year. That's the one. And that's the beauty of baseball is that you don't get to see that in any other sport.
No.
It maybe sometimes in hockey, but nothing else to this level of that's the throw-in piece. Yeah, we'll watch this in a couple of years. And that's the beauty of what we've got here in this trade, especially is that's one that, obviously, if Milwaukee knew what Nelson Cruz was about to do, you never would have made him available. You probably would have, this trade probably would not have included like Francisco Cordero, and it probably would have just been like Carlos Lee for Minch and Nick. And that's all you would have done, because you wouldn't have included Cruz, and so the Rangers wouldn't have included their closer. That's what you have done, but that was it. And it's a beautiful trade because it dealt with the now of Carlos Lee, but it more dealt with the future in the Nelson Cruz. And I love deals like that where, and there's many more like it, but that's one that just, I can say in my youth, because I was still in my mid-20s at the time, but I remember in my mid-20s thinking, ooh, this is something special just because what this holds for the future.
Yeah, there was a flurry of trades back in that particular time frame that was just like, some of them were head scratches, some of them was like, okay, I see what you're doing there, John Daniels. I've got one that's from, before our lifetime, because this one's always fascinated me, and a lot of this is hindsight is 2020. There's a lot of that in my wow factor of this trade, but this one has always just stuck with me. So in 1969, yeah, the Miracle Mets, right? Weren't supposed to do anything, and they just came out of nowhere. Well, a member of that pitching staff was one Nolan Ryan. In December of 1971, the Mets traded Ryan plus Leroy Stanton, Don Rose, and Frank Estrada to the Angels for Jim Fregosi. That's it. Just Jim Fregosi. It's a four-player going one-way trade, including Nolan Ryan, who not too long ago just helped the Mets win a World Series when they weren't supposed to win a World Series. This one has always perplexed me, Irby, because I don't understand why the Mets would do it. I guess you would have to be there at that time.
and look at it through the perspective of Nolan Ryan hasn't become Nolan Ryan yet part. But still, you got a guy that throws like Nolan Ryan has always throughout his entire career. Why would you just toss him into a trade like that?
Yeah, that one definitely didn't work out well for them because Gergosi, though he had some really successful numbers, was on that downslope. And Ryan, in that season, that 1971 season, I mean, he was 10-14 with a sub-4 ERA. So it's one of those, it's like, all right, this is solid, but this isn't great. And he still, I never realized how many he walked as well. That's incredible. He walked 116 batters in 152 innings that season, but he struck out 137.
Yeah.
It all clicked that next season. That next season, he's a 19-game winner. His ERA is 2.28. He struck out 329. So yeah. The string began. I mean, that's great because it literally began after that trade. It's, all you had to do was get out of New York and get out to sunny California, and suddenly Nolan Ryan. I mean, it's not one of those like, oh, yeah, that eventually hurts. No, it literally killed you the next season.
That was back when it wasn't the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I believe they were the California Angels at that point in 1971. They were the California Angels, and they actually traded for pitching. Legitimate pitching. Pitching they needed. Maybe, I don't know. You're about to get a new owner, Halos. Maybe that there's some magic in the California Angels name, as opposed to Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, San Diego, Santa Barbara. That's all I'm saying. Just throw it out there. Maybe change it to California Angels. All right. That's going to do it. We're out of here. Until next week, watch some football. It's good for you.
You gonna come.